You're listening to the Wobcast with the one and only, the legendary, insurmountable Wobby.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back. Another edition of the Wobcast. Thanks to Josh Duhamel for making me sound so cool. He's like one of the coolest guys on the planet, and he's saying nice things about me. So, I mean, talk about getting some street cred. It's a great way to start the show. We did it last week. We did it again this week. Can't wait to get some more of those one-liners from the cool people we have on the Wobcast. Which, everyone, by the way, this is your host, Wobby, coming to you from TCO Studios at Winter Park with producer Chris Corso. We have a cool guest coming up later today, Vikings middle linebacker Eric Kendrick. So stay tuned for that coming up in a few minutes. Welcome back, Chris.
That's right, Wobby, and it was good to hear Kendricks. He obviously had a great game against the Saints. It was good to see the defense, especially in the red zone, and how they stopped Breeze, one of the best quarterbacks of all time.
Yeah.
He was impressive, and he spoke about his time in L.A. During the offseason and a lot of good tidbits in there. So.
Yeah, fun to have Eric in the studio. Fun to have you a part of the Wobcast, Chris. Those listening for to the first one for the season who didn't listen to the first episode, new producer in-house, it's Chris Corso. That was his voice. Nate Vaughn off producing other things. Still with the Vikings, doing Beyond the Gridiron, so that's taken up a bunch of his time. So we said goodbye to Nate last week. We said hello to Chris last week, and now we're rolling. We have a jam-packed show. Kendricks is going to join. We're also going to hear from Steve Hutchinson. We have some of your mail. And, of course, we need to preview the matchup against the Steelers. But first, we want to review what happened on Monday night against the New Orleans Saints. Lots of really good things, Chris, to go over. You've got a bunch of notes here on offensive performances from the Vikings against the Saints. So start us off. What do you got?
Well, I think the guy you got to start off with is Sam Bradford, and that is the NFC Offensive Player of the Week. He was 27 for 32 on passes, which was very impressive. 346 yards with three touchdowns and, of course, no interceptions. ESPN actually said that he had the highest QBR of all quarterbacks, which was great to see. He outplayed one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL in Drew Brees, and that was the key matchup on this one. When it comes to offense, there were two wide receivers who really looked good, and that's Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen.
You're right, they did, and it's like chicken or the egg. Were they making Bradford look good, or is Bradford making them look good?
It's all good.
Yeah, it was all good. Those three guys were really in sync, and I have to also say Pat Shurmur with the play design and the game calling was magnificent, because Diggs made some really tough contested catches, but Thielen's, who also made some catches in traffic, Thielen was like breaking wide open, so he's running great routes. And Shurmur's designing great routes against his Saints defense, and Bradford was finding Thielen all night long. Awesome to see. Bradford, highest career passer rating.
Wow.
143. First time he's ever won Conference Player of the Week honors, which is saying something because he was Rookie of the Year in St. Louis. And only five incompletions on the night for Bradford.
That's impressive.
32 attempts. Yards per attempt for Bradford, 10.8.
Wow.
All those people who said he would never throw the ball downfield eating their words on Monday night. You're right. Diggs and Thielen both looked awesome. Only one receiver had more receiving yards than Adam Thielen in week one. Who was it?
Was it Antonio Brown.
Yeah, and those two, of course, meet on the field on Sunday. Those three guys looked really good. Offensive line, great in pass protection. Pro Football Focus ranked the Vikings offensive line as the number four offensive line
in terms of
pass protection efficiency in week one, so
wow,
that was cool. And then, of course, we had Dalvin Cook, who looked really good also.
We'll go to the running backs, and just hearing Pat Shurmur speak at his press conference minutes ago, he spoke about how it's great to have a stable of running backs. You got three guys who do totally different things. He spoke about when he had one guy on his pass teams that he kind of felt restricted as a play caller, and clearly he was not restricted in this one. Dalvin Cook broke the franchise record for a rookie debut with 127 yards, and that was Adrian Peterson's record that he broke. So that was impressive. On 22 carries, he had two plays of plus 30-yard gains, 33 and 32-yard gains. So I think overall it was a great debut for Mr. Dalvin Cook.
Yeah, it was. And for the Vikings offense, and particularly for the Vikings offensive line, which that was the first time those five played together. because Reef was injured in the preseason. So even in Seattle, when it was Elflein at center and Easton at left guard, Reef was not in the lineup. It was Rashad Hill. So that game on Monday night was the first time those five had played together, but they look like they've been playing together all season. So we look for continued improvement from those guys, but off to a really good start. Now, all of this offensive production overshadowed a tremendous defensive performance by the Vikings.
Tremendous. And that, I mean, to see the way they played in the red zone against one of the best of all time, like we said, I was stunned by how they held the Saints to only field goals until the end there when they scored that garbage touchdown. But one of the key plays was Kendricks and Tom Johnson sacking Drew Brees. Yeah. And the play actually got called for roughing the passer because apparently Tom Johnson went low at Drew Brees' knees. And beg to differ on that one.
Yeah.
But then they moved forward with a first down and 15 yards, and they got into the red zone, the Saints, and the Vikings defense held them to a field goal, which was one of the more impressive drives for the defense in the game.
Here's a crazy stat from this game.
Let's hear it.
Drew Brees did not get to 100 yards passing until 3 minutes and 42 seconds to go in the third quarter.
Incredible.
I mean, that was unbelievable. The Saints running game was rendered futile. No Saints running back got to 20 yards rushing. Michael Thomas neutralized by Xavier Rhodes. Trey Waynes played well, led the team in tackles, and had more tackles than any corner in the NFL in week one. Trey Waynes, 11 tackles. Got beat on that double move, and that's what people may remember. Other than that play, Trey Waynes was outstanding on Monday night. And just a great defensive performance overall by the Vikings that was really kind of overshadowed because of how great the offense looked. But let's not forget how good that defense was. Which brings us to today's guest, Vikings linebacker Eric Kendricks. We bring him in now to talk about a bunch of things. All right, and that brings us to today's guest. It's Vikings linebacker Eric Kendricks, the man in the middle of the Vikings defense. First off, you were in the studio today doing a PSA. What's that all about?
Man, just trying to help Minneapolis with hunger. You know, we have seniors, you have kids. A lot of people are hungry, and it's a problem that needs to be, I mean, it can't be solved all the way, but we can sure try to help.
You know, there are so many different causes or charities that someone in your position can choose to support, and I know you try to support as many as you can, but how do you decide which one you get behind?
I kind of ask for a little bit of help. You know, I obviously know I want to help in the community and, you know, help back in my own community back in Fresno, California. But I definitely need help doing it because I can't do it myself. So there's a lot of people who are willing to help and a bunch of organizations around Minneapolis that are doing great things. So I just jumped on board with a couple and rolling with it.
Yeah. You mentioned being from California. We came out to visit you this summer. Mm-hmm. And on campus at UCLA, that was pretty cool. Also cool is we saw Allison Felix, who's got like 10,000 medals in the Olympics. I think she's been to 3 Olympic Games. She's got like 11 world championships. But for us, that was super cool. For you, you're just like, yeah, I see that all the time here.
Yeah, you know, I've seen, you know, LeBron, D. Wade. I mean, so many basketball players I can't even name.
Yeah.
Serena Williams.
Yeah,
Tom. My first day on the UCLA practice field, it was like Tom Brady and Wes Welker on the other field throwing.
Wow.
So I mean, it's just that's what you just get when you're in LA, I guess.
Yeah. What was it like being a part of that atmosphere and that defensive performance against the Saints?
I mean, it was fun. You know, it felt good to be back out there with the guys. You know, preseason was cool and everything like that, but it's nothing like that. You know.
Yeah.
Monday night, first game of the year.
What makes Brees so good? I mean, you guys did a great job against him, but we all know he's a good player. What makes him good?
Man, the ability to just read coverages, handle the pressure, and make adjustments, and just make the throw at the end of the day. You know, he's definitely been doing it for a long time, so the experience can't hurt him either.
Yeah. Now you're preparing for Ben, you know, another probably future Hall of Fame quarterback. So Is it different or the same with Ben?
It depends. You know, it's hard to say because, you know, I'm still trying to play the defense at the end of the day. But definitely, you know, different quarterbacks, both very high caliber. And this is my first time playing him. I'm excited. He's a big guy, you know, Big Ben, so they call him.
Yeah.
So hopefully we can tackle him.
That atmosphere at Heinz Field is incredible,
and I've always wanted to play there since a kid.
Yeah.
You know, whether it was, you know, I don't want to say for them, but, you know, when going to the drafts and things like that, you know, I've always wanted to play in the Steelers uniform. Not a Steelers uniform, but
in that environment.
Yeah, in the stadium, you know it's crazy, you know. I've seen a lot of games as a kid and stuff.
Yeah, and they've been good for a long time.
Yeah, you know,
and so you see them on TV all the time.
Yeah, I had a family member growing up who was a big Steelers fan, so we always watched the games, and I'm so excited to play.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Have a good week of prep. Stay healthy. Thanks for all your hard work making our team great. We appreciate it, and thanks for hopping on the Wobcast.
All right, appreciate it.
And for listening, because we know you listen to the Wobcast all the time. All right, man, see you later. Bye. All right, time to know your enemy, Vikings fans. This week it's the Pittsburgh Steelers. We go to Heinz Field for their home opener. The Steelers, like the last two seasons, I saw a stat. They've outscored opponents in their home openers like 81-39 or something like that. So the Vikings are going to try and reverse that trend, or at least offer a little bit of resistance to it. I think, Chris, when you think about the Steelers, it's the killer bees, right? It's Ben, Bell, and Brown.
That's right. You got three bees. You have probably one of the best running backs in the league, and Le'Veon Bell, who wasn't with the team for all of offseason, all of preseason, as well as training camp. He just returned a week before the season, and that showed in week one. He ran for 32 yards on 10 carries. The offense did not look good in the run game. They were a little stagnant in Cleveland against the Browns. They did win the game, but it all starts with Le'Veon Bell as a receiver and as a rusher, and he did not perform the way he did last season. In 12 games last season, 1,268 rushing yards, 75 receptions, and like I said, in just 12 games. So we know he can do it.
Yeah.
What do you think about him against the Vikings?
Well, I hope he's still knocking off some rust here in week two. I mean, like you said, he hadn't been with the team since last year, so it's obviously going to take time to get back into things. But he's got a game under his belt, so you expect improvement. So I would go into the game expecting to see full-on 100% Le'Veon Bell after getting one game in his belt playing
at
home.
Sure.
Yeah, so he's going to be a handful. You know, Roethlisberger, I think last week he passed Fran Tarkenton and now ranks ninth. He was 10th and now he's ninth for passing yards in a career.
He did.
Yeah.
He went by Fran with 47,000 yards. It's crazy how long he's been around.
Yeah.
And it's crazy how high Fran Tarkenton is on that list.
Well, when Fran retired, he was number one, like, in everything. Like, he was, like, number one in passing yards, attempts, completions, touchdowns. I mean, he was the man when he retired. Since then, the passing game has evolved, gotten...
It's a different game.
It's a different game now, yeah, and quarterbacks have surpassed him. But at the time, when Fran retired, he was the best at that position of all time when you look at stats. And even when you don't look at stats, you know, he still is one of the best of all time. But yeah, Ben Roethlisberger passes scrambling Fran on the passing yardage chart last week, goes into ninth all time. Surprisingly, as long as Ben does hold the ball, he doesn't take a ton of sacks.
He does not.
I think it was only 17 or 18 sacks by him last year.
That's right.
So the Vikings are going to have to figure out a way to put some pressure on him. Rush smart, as coaches say. This offensive line is big. They're long. They're long-armed, and they're big. They're not... like, we have an athletic offensive line that can move quicker. Yeah, the Steelers are big, so the Vikings got to adjust how they rush based on the offensive line they're going against. And this one is just really big. So Danielle Hunter, Everson Griffin, they got to be quick. They got to use speed moves. I'll be interested to see how we fare there, because we have a great pass rush and Ben doesn't take a lot of sacks.
Yeah, QB is different too. He's tough to bring down.
Yeah,
he's a big boy.
Something's got to give there. And finally, I think the key matchup of the game, Xavier Rhodes against Antonio Brown. 1,000 receiving yards in 5 of the past 7 seasons for Antonio Brown is the note you have here on the sheet, Chris. 106 catches last year. Our guys at the Move the Sticks podcast, Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks, broke down this epic matchup between Xavier Rhodes and Antonio Brown. Take a listen.
One of the best games of the weekend, Bucky. Minnesota Vikings traveling to take on the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the matchup we're going to follow in this one, an epic matchup between a wide receiver and a defensive back.
This league is a pass-first league. You have to be able to pass the ball to be successful. And so a team that wants to win, you also have to be able to stop it on defense. Antonio Brown, Xavier Rhodes, can't wait to see it go down.
I like this matchup because you've got a smaller wide receiver that plays big, and you've got a bigger corner who can play small. When you look at the sizes there, a significant difference. I don't know, what, 30 pounds difference here in weight. But it's going to be a fair fight because when you watch Antonio Brown play and you break him down, Bucky, I see somebody at the line of scrimmage who can play big. He might not be tall, but he's not small, Bucky. He is very strong. He can go up and play above the rim.
He absolutely will play above the rim. One of the best contested ball catchers that you're going to see. And Ben Roethlisberger has a lot of confidence in him. So those 50-50 balls, he's going to throw up to Antonio Brown because he knows that Antonio Brown can come down with him. There you see the stats, 11 receptions, 183 yards, big-time playmaker, and he took over when they needed him to dominate. That's one of the challenges of the Minnesota Vikings, finding a way to slow him down.
And he's great after the catch, as you can see there, but he's going to have somebody that can match him at the line of scrimmage, can mirror him down the field, and somebody that can get him down the open field, an elite corner in Xavier Rhodes.
Hey, Xavier Rhodes is a big-time cornerback. I was up in Minnesota doing training camp when they paid him. They made him they compensated him like one of the top five corners in the game, and he plays to that level. When you watch him on tape, it's all about the physicality and toughness. He's going to challenge you at the line. He's going to make you earn every yard. And so for a guy like Antonio Brown, who really overwhelms people with his shiftiness, he could have to face a physical guy that really forces him to change the way that he normally likes to play in space. Xavier Rhodes is one of the best in the business. Can't wait to see how this matchup plays out. Yeah.
One final cool note on this Brown Rhodes matchup. They went to the same high school, Chris.
Yeah, that was I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I really didn't. I knew they were both from Miami, but to hear that they went to the same high school, that's really cool, and they'll be going against each other one-on-one.
Awesome matchup. Can't wait to see how Zim chooses to defend Antonio Brown, if it's Rhodes shadowing him, if it's bracketing him with Rhodes and Smith, if it's bracketing him with Smith and Waynes and letting Rhodes take... I mean, just so many different ways you can do it. Can't wait to see that chess match between Mike Zimmer and Steelers offensive coordinator, former head coach in the NFL, Todd Haley, who's good play designer.
Chiefs coach back in the day.
Yes, he was, and really good offensive coordinator, both with the Steelers, also was really good with the Cardinals.
I think it could be the best of the best in Xavier Rhodes and Antonio Brown.
In the league?
I could be biased with Xavier Rhodes, but I think the season he had last year and obviously paying him in the offseason, I think he's up there with the top corner.
I think he is too. All right, let's transition to something else. Speaking of best of the best, one of the best offensive guards I've ever seen play in person was Steve Hutchinson. He joined NFL Network this week and talked about a few things. He's one of the finalists, 108, I guess, finalist for this year's class of Hall of Famers. That list continues to get reduced as we get closer to the Super Bowl. Right now, it's down to a 108 eligible people for induction in this year's Hall of Fame. Steve Hutchinson is one of them. So he joined NFL Network to talk about that. But he also talked about some other things like blocking for Adrian Peterson and playing with John Randall. And the crew at NFL Network had some cool John Randall sound. You guys will enjoy this. Take a listen.
Well, joining us right now is one of those first-time eligibles, a seven-time Pro Bowl offensive lineman, Steve Hutchinson. And, Steve, I know that offensive linemen don't like to talk about themselves, but when you found out that you're among the 108, did you get some goosies?
Yeah, it's an honor to be named with some of these guys that are on this list. Guys I respected and played against, obviously, for a long time. And, again, it's an honor.
You'll have to forgive fans if they never focused on the guard position when they're watching football on Sunday. So if people were to break down tape of you, what do you think they would see and take away?
Well, I like to pride myself on the technique part of the game. Again, that's not a lot of things or not something you can see from the film or the TV watching at home. But when you have running backs behind you like Sean, Adrian, and some of the other guys, Chester Taylor, guys I've blocked for, and you open those holes and you see the success you have and how much it helps the offense and the quarterbacks. It's football is an ultimate team game. And when you can help those guys move the ball down the field and control the clock and do all those things, keep your defense off the field, really, that's what the offensive line position boils down to.
You know, for 5 years, you lined up next to Walter Jones, and he went into Canton a few years ago. Is that when you started thinking about the possibility of becoming a Hall of Famer?
Well, I'll be honest. I was kind of blown away. I went to that his enshrinement, and I spent the weekend in Canton, and I saw, obviously, you knew it was a first-class operation. You knew all the all the things that went along with that weekend. But when you see it first time in person, it really blew me away. And it's obviously the biggest individual honor you can have in this sport. And it's something you think of since you're a little kid when you start playing this game. And short of winning a Super Bowl, I don't see more of a satisfaction you can get in this game. So I'd be lying to tell you that I didn't start thinking about it when I saw Walt going, yeah.
Is your proudest moment helping Sean Alexander tie the touchdown rushing record?
Well, honestly, we set it in 2005 with Sean, and then right. LaDainian broke it the next year. Any of those numbers that some of these backs get, and when you block for quarterbacks that break a record or throw for a certain amount of touchdowns or yards, I mean that's what we take and that's what we relish as an offensive lineman. I think the one that really stands out for me was when Adrian Peterson set the single game rushing record in 2007 against the Chargers. That's something that as an offensive lineman you can say, yeah, I blocked in that game. I blocked for the guy that set the record. He's got the record.
All right, one of the other Hall of Famers that you played with was John Randall. And by the time he got to Seattle, you arrive as a rookie up there. He already had a PhD in trash talking. And for people who are not familiar with it, give a listen.
Some of this shit is illegal. Some of this shit is rated R and triple X. Regulators, mount up. Red Rover, Red Rover. Let them f***ers come on over.
There's a storm coming, baby.
You know what? Look at that. Look at that. That's time for me to get out of your ass.
So I imagine you have a few good John Randall stories when you got up there as a rookie.
Well, as you can imagine, as a rookie, you're just trying to figure out where to line up. And I got to go against John Randall every day for in practice for 3 years. You know, and you see a clip like that about John and you hear him. But there was a method to his madness. You know, he knew that he was hard to block. And he felt it was hard enough to block him when you were focusing 100% on that play each and every down. So he figured if he could get in your head and make you think about anything at all other than blocking him, he knew that made his job a little bit more easy. And like I said, having to go against him and practice every day for 3 years, by the time I got to Sunday, it seemed like a lot of these guys I was going against was in slow motion.
Are you trying to tell me one of the first few days of camp when you were a rookie, you didn't call home and say, Mama, there's a crazy man across from me?
There's a crazy guy. I don't have to sit in the meeting room with him. I'll just eat my lunch in the corner and try to just look down, yeah.
Steve Hutchinson, congratulations on making the cut to 108, and we look forward to continuing the journey with you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, we're back here, and it's with Wobby's fan mail. He gets emails every week, and he's nice enough to respond to just about every single one of them. So we're going to start out with Toby Smart from Alaska.
Yeah, my man Toby emails all the time, every week.
That's awesome. Yeah. We got a fan out there in Alaska.
Yep.
So I think this is what we have been waiting for, says Toby. But why not more Laquon Treadwell yet? I thought the red zone is what we got him for. Do you think he's going to surprise us all soon, says Toby.
Yeah, I mean, would love to have seen more from Laquon also, but it's not his fault. A lot of the plays, it looked to me, were designed with Thielen and Diggs in mind. They had a lot of route combinations that were working off of each other, where one of them would draw coverage, the other one would be open. I mean, I went back and sat down at my desk with PA, actually. We watched every snap that Laquon was in. That was 37 snaps in the game. And there were a lot of times when he was open on his route, but Bradford was looking somewhere else. And I'm not criticizing Bradford for that. He only had 5 incompletions, as we had talked about earlier.
Yep.
Bradford was on fire. He was making the right decisions. Laquon was open on some of his routes. Also, Laquon was blocking his rear end off in this game. You look at some of the runs that Dalvin Cook had or some of the yards after the catch by Thielen and Diggs. It's partially because Laquon is blocking his tail off. So I thought Laquon played well. I know he only had one catch, but I thought he gave a good accounting of himself, and I do expect him to be more involved more often this season. But I think the lack of production in week one is just a function of the game plan being more focused on Diggs and Thielen.
Well, one good thing to see was 37 snaps played, which is obviously his career high. So to see that out of him, that's a positive. And like you said, the blocking, he's a big wide receiver. So we'll see how he progresses next week. And that leads to the second question from Casey Hansen. We all know that Heinz Field is a tough place to play. Mm-hmm. So what is the main focus on how to win on the road against a team like the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, and I've been to Heinz Field, Chris, one time back in 2009. We played at Pittsburgh. We had Favre and Adrian and Percy and Sidney. And we were 6-0. We went to Heinz Field. The Steelers were 6-0, and it was an epic game. The Steelers got a defensive touchdown late in the game to win. But it was just an outstanding game, and I was so impressed with the environment, the atmosphere, the way the fans are there. It's just such a cool place to go watch a game. So really looking forward to going back there. You just have to be focused, and you have to try and get as comfortable as you can be. Routine is such a big part of everyday life in the NFL. Coaches want to get their players on a routine so that they feel more comfortable. I think the Vikings got to avoid negative plays like penalties and rushes for negative yards. They got to stay on schedule in the down distance on offense. And then on defense, they got to do their best to avoid giving up chunk plays. I think if you make the offense, if Mike Zimmer's defense makes the opposing offense drive 8, 9, 10, 12 plays to score, eventually the offense is going to make a mistake. They're going to give up a sack. They're going to fumble. There's going to be a tip pass. There's going to be a penalty. So I think that's a big thing on defense is don't give up those big chunk plays. And then on offense, it's stay away from negative plays, particularly penalties.
I agree there, Wobby. It's definitely going to be an adjustment coming off the game at home where the crowd is so loud at US Bank Stadium. Yeah. So now you're going to have it going the other way for the Steelers and one of the loudest stadiums there. All right, and we have one more question with the fan mail here, and it's from Raymond Bustos from Oregon. I was really worried about our run defense after watching the preseason. Did something get fixed, or was it Coach Zimmer not wanting to show his hand in games that don't matter?
No, I don't think it's that. I think it's something got fixed. To me, the Vikings' run defense has always been about execution, not ability. They have the ability to stop the run. I know that a lot of people would discredit or criticize the Vikings' run defense from last season, but I actually think it was a lot better than most people are giving it credit for. You know, we ranked 20th in yards allowed and 17th in yards per carry allowed, which is not good. But we ranked 3rd in rushing touchdowns allowed, and our longest touchdown run allowed was 10 yards, and that was by Aaron Rodgers, so that's really good. We only allowed 4 100-yard rushing performances all season. 2 of them were by one guy, Jordan Howard, so that's really good. And we held our first 6 opponents, including 2 offenses that eventually ranked in top 10 in rushing, to below their season average. We held Tennessee to 64. We held Green Bay to 83. We held Carolina under their average. We held the Giants under their average. We held Houston to 59, and we held Philadelphia underneath their average.
That's not bad.
So we started the season doing great. When we started giving up yardage, it was because of long runs.
Yeah.
Like Jordan Howard had a 69-yard rush, I believe, at at Soldier Field. Theo Riddick had a 42-yard rush at U.S. Bank Stadium. Ezekiel Elliott had 1 long rush against us for 30 yards. Other than that, we held him in check pretty well. Robert Turbin had 2 carries for 32 yards. We gave up these long runs, and I think that really skewed our rushing defense's performance. So to me, it's about execution. It's about being in the right gaps and not having lapses. It's not about this vast inability against the run or a schematic problem against the run where we're focusing so much on the pass that we give up a bunch of rushing yards. It's not that. It's just execution. So I'm not worried about it because I think it's been a focus of the Vikings all offseason. I think it'll be a good run defense all season.
And Zimmer did also note that he was trying a few things out in the preseason games when it comes to run defense. So you can't always take the preseason as what you're going to see in the regular season.
Yeah. And that's true. And don't you think the way that we played in week one is a great example? I mean,
I think that's a great
everyone was hating on our defense from the preseason. Look what they did to Drew Brees in week one.
It was certainly impressive. And you saw what they did to the running backs, 3 guys that they have there in New Orleans. So that was impressive. And that'll do it for our fan mail. That's great stuff. And we look forward to keep answering those questions every single week here on the Wobcast. And we're going to come back with our another popular segment, and that's the over-under segment, looking at last week's performances and going towards this week. So we'll be back with that. All right, we're back with the over-under segment here on the Wobcast, and I'm going to throw these straight at Wobby, and then I'll give my my two bits. The first one is passing yards for Sam Bradford. He had such a great game in that first game against the Saints, so we're going passing yards against the Steelers on the road, under over 300 yards.
Ooh, man.
Tie.
You put a 300-yard passing day on these Steelers at Heinz Field, you're going to win the game.
Yeah.
Bradford can do it. We saw how efficient he was against the Saints. God, this Steelers defense had 7 sacks in Cleveland last week. You know, Bradford was only sacked once. Now, granted, DeShone Kizer was holding on to the ball for much longer than Sam Bradford will hold on to the ball.
That's for sure.
I don't think we're going to give up, you know, close to 7 sacks. But still, man, 300 yards is a lot. I like so much how our running game looked in the second half. I think it's important to run the ball when you're on the road. It's especially important at Heinz Field because of the home field advantage and crowd noise that we talked about earlier. And I mean, I don't want to like be the downer here or doubt Sam because he's the offensive player of the week in the NFC. But I just think we're gonna focus on the run and we're gonna have success running it. That I can't see us, you know, having 450 or 500 yards of offense here in this game. I think we're gonna try and shorten the game by running the ball, and I think this is going to be a little bit of a lower scoring game maybe than it was against the Saints. So I'm going to go under here, but like it's not in a negative way. I think
it's a high number.
The route to win is different than getting 300 yards. Like I'm afraid if Sam has over 300 yards passing, it's because we're losing and we got to try and come back in the fourth quarter. So I'm going to go under here.
I'm going to be bold.
I'm going over.
And I'm only going to go over because of the Steelers' secondary. It's weak this year.
All right.
You saw they had to go out and pick up Joe Hayden when the Browns released him because they needed a corner.
Yeah.
Those safeties are a little weak as well. It's a different Steelers defense than it was 5 or so years ago. So I like what I saw from Adam Thielen. I like what I saw from Stephon Diggs. I think Laquon Treadwell can make a little bit of an impact. And then, of course, Kyle Rudolph. So I'm sticking with Sammy Sleeves over 300.
That's great. Now I'm not trying to make it look bad,
but
I can't go to the cafeteria now and eat lunch with these guys. I have to stay downstairs and keep my head buried so no one finds me.
That was bold.
Thanks a lot.
I was being bold there. All right, we're gonna go to the Vikings defense. Talking about the offense there, now we'll go to the defense. We did not have a turnover when it comes to interceptions or fumble recoveries in that first game. We're going to go under over 1.5 on the turnovers forced by the Vikings defense.
I'm going over on this. I think Ben's going to put the ball in the air, and I think he's going to get his, but I also think there's a chance that we get our hands on a pass or two in this game. Doesn't mean we're going to win the game. Doesn't mean Ben's going to have a bad day, but Ben will put this thing up there. We broke some film down with Bursich, and part of what makes Ben so great is he's fearless. He has the ability to squeeze the football into tight spots, and he's not afraid to do so. I really like our secondary, and I think we can be in the right spot at the right time for a pick. And it won't surprise me if we can get the ball on the ground, recover a fumble, and get 2 turnovers in this game. So I'll play the over.
I see the over there, and I guess I'll go under on this one.
Right.
I see a lot of weapons on that offense. Antonio Brown, Martavius Bryant, who's back for the full season here, coming off of suspension last year. I just think there's a lot of talent in those wide receivers. And, of course, Le'Veon Bell, who has shown the ability to protect the football. Yeah. So I'm going to go under. I think we maybe forced 1 turnover in this game.
You know what? That might be enough.
I mean,
we had 0 against the Saints and still killed them. So 1 might be enough to do it, but I see us getting 2.
The next one, this is going to be big. We already talked about the matchup to watch, and that's Antonio Brown against Xavier Rhodes. We're going to go receiving yards for Antonio Brown, and that's under over 90 receiving yards. Keep in mind, we said he leads the entire league after week 1 in receiving yards. What do you think, Wobby?
Brown can get this in the first quarter if you're not careful.
Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, I don't say this with a cavalier attitude. I say it with a calculated one, but I'm under, though, on this. I'm still going under. I've just seen too many times Mike Zimmer, George Edwards, Jerry Gray devise us a scheme in the secondary, and Andre Patterson and Adam Zimmer getting their guys to rush the passer. Just too many times against Jordy Nelson and Julio Jones and all these guys. Odell Beckham last year had a career low in receiving yards. So I've just seen it too many times where it works, and I'm going to side with the Vikings defense on this. I'm taking under on that receiving yardage total for Antonio Brown. It's too high.
I'm going to agree with you, Wabi, on this one. We're going to agree on the last one. After seeing Xavier Rhodes against some of the best wide receivers last year, going against DeAndre Hopkins, Odell Beckham Jr., all those guys are under 90 yards. I think Antonio Brown is no different here, and I think he's going to shut him down.
All righty. Over-under is over, and so is the Wobcast. We've gotten to the end of the podcast. You're still listening, and we thank you for that. It was a jam-packed show today. It included Eric Kendricks and Steve Hutchinson and a bunch of other stuff as well, as we looked back on the Vikings' big season-opening win over the Saints, and we previewed the Vikings' matchup against the Steelers. More awesome content coming to you on Vikings.com the rest of the week and the weekend leading up to Sunday's game at Heinz Field against the Steelers. Kickoff, 1 Eastern, noon Central. Of course, you can hear the game on the Vikings Radio Network, where Paul Allen, Pete Bursich, Greg Coleman, and Ben Lieber will be bringing you the call. Our coverage of the game will be wall-to-wall in Pittsburgh, so make sure you check that out. Follow all of the Vikings accounts on social media. We have great platforms, photography, tweets, stats, game updates, all that stuff, especially pregame and postgame, coming to you on some of your favorite Vikings social media accounts, so make sure you're following us there. Download the Vikings app if you haven't already. A lot of you listen to the podcast on the Vikings app, but if you're listening via iTunes or the podcast app on your phone and you don't have the Vikings app, go to the App Store and download it. It's free and it's awesome. That's going to do it. One more thing I wanted to tell you guys. Everson Griffin wired for the Saints game on Monday night, and it was a really good wire, too. So make sure you check that out if you haven't already. That's on the Vikings.com and the Vikings app. On behalf of producer Chris Corso, I'm your host, Mike Wobshaw, signing off on the Wobcast for now. We'll talk to you guys next week.